The Indigo Girls return to their hometown next week to play Chastain Amphitheater in Atlanta as they tour with their new album, One Lost Day. And maybe it's not surprising to learn that the duo, known for penning literate folk songs, are big readers. Amy Ray and Emily Saliers stop by the station to talk about some of their favorite books and an installment of Page Turners. I spoke with Emily first. Your first choice, Emily, is A Complicated Kindness by Miriam Taves. Tell me about what happens in this book.
The setting is small town, a rural Manitoba in a Mennonite community. And you have the protagonist is a 16-year-old girl named Nomi. Her mother and sister have both left the home. She's sort of left with her father, who's a teacher, and I wouldn't say a sad sack, but he's a poignant guy. You know, his wife has left, and no one quite, you don't know why. In the book, you start to get clues. But Miriam Taves is so funny and so sharp and so poignant. Like, what I love about her writing is it goes at a clip, but it's not kitschy or stylized in a way that doesn't feel authentic to its subject matter. And she's so funny about very dark things. So she doesn't write like a weepy person.
And you have the book here with you today.
There's a lot. Yeah, I'm flipping to my page. So this is at the very towards the beginning of the book. And it's along the book, you get flashbacks about what her mother was like. So I'll just read this little part. She was a whiz with click, that canned meat that looks like crushed human flesh and comes with a built-on key you can twist around to open the tin. I wish I had harder facts about her, a complete picture with high-tone definition, but she was hard to pin down. There was something seething away inside of her, something fierce and unpredictable, like a saw in a birthday cake. She played content like Jack Nicholson played Crazy in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. But Ray truly was content to sit at the head of the table in his suit and tie and joke around with his two relatively normal daughters and fun-loving wife who had hazel eyes and sexy 90s and a passport with a glamorous black-and-white photo of herself tucked away in the top drawer of her dresser.
One thing that strikes me as interesting is that the narrator saying this isn't very much detail, but it is. It's all these gems of great specificity that just sort of hit you.
It is, and that's the gift of the writer. Through the kid's perspective, it's not enough details, not nearly enough, as she's trying to recreate her mother. And yet, Miriam gives us all the details to describe a woman with a passport waiting to go, her sexy 90s, stuck in a town in Manitoba with her community of Mennonites. For anybody who's interested in Miriam Taves' work, read all her books because they have a sort of whimsy to them. This one is particularly dark, but funny.
Speaking of whimsy, your second choice is a sprawling Russian novel from 1880. In fact, the sprawling Russian novel people talk about when they talk about sprawling Russian novels. Often I will prompt people to describe quickly the basic plot of their book choice. Is it possible to do that with Dostoevsky's The Brothers Karamazov?
It is, well, not quickly. I'm not even going to attempt to do that. I'll just say that I used to be afraid of Russian literature, and I used to read it way before I was able to understand any of it to be cool. Like, I read Moby Dick when I was, like, I don't know, 13, which is ridiculous, and all these, just to be cool. But in the end, this is not a complicated book. I mean, it's not like he's saying words I can't understand. And I was struck by how much I wanted to turn the pages at a clip and keep reading about the characters.
What do you say to folks who maybe didn't read, you know, Moby Dick at age 13 to be cool? And I actually understand where you're coming from saying that, because I think I was the same sort of kid. Like, I remember sitting, you know, when I was 11, reading Time magazine when I knew my parents' friends were coming over.
Exactly.
It's like I wasn't trying to impress my friends. I was trying to impress their friends.
Thanks for admitting that.
What's that about? I don't know, awesome. But I get it. So what do you say to folks who may be a little put off by that, the fact that its density and its size and its just cast of characters that goes on and on?
Well, to me, I thought, oh, this is going to be Russian and dark and nihilist. And it's the opposite of that. I mean, Dostoevsky is obviously, when you read this novel, you realize that he's a compassionate human being. When the great priest, the Zosima, I think his name is pronounced, dies and they're expecting him to like float up to heaven or whatever, and then his body starts to stink so badly and then people start doubting their faith because flesh is rotting. I thought that was perfect.
Awesome.
Yep. I'll never read it again. But I'll recommend it on my book list.
Fair enough.
All right. It's one of my favorite books too.
Mm-hmm. I didn't know that.
Dostoevsky's one of my favorite writers of all time.
So Amy Ray, Your first choice.
Now we got to dumb down a little bit from my YA choice.
I was excited that you chose this book because I got to say the one line that it is known for.
Stay gold.
Stay gold. Stay gold, Pony Boy. Tell me about The Outsiders by S.C. Hinton and how it influenced you.
Well, when I got my hands on this book, I think I was probably in 6th or 7th grade. And then I read it repeatedly throughout high school. And the story is so awesome. And I mean, a lot of people know it. It's West Side Story. It's Romeo and Juliet. Basically, you know, there's these two gangs that are rival gangs, and you learn to have more empathy for the greasers and understand where they're coming from. And there's a accidental killing that happens, and it's redemptive and, you know, incredible. And I read everything that S.E. Hinton wrote. And I didn't know, because we didn't have Google back then, that she was a she, which is fascinating to me, because I even then identified more as in a masculine sort of gender way, not transgender, but very gender fluid. And so one of the things about the book that really helped me was having this book that was so much about brotherly bonding and so from such a feminine perspective, and I didn't even realize it. Do you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And I think S.E. Hinton was really important to a lot of people my age that were developing and trying to deal with outsider status. At that age, I wasn't trying to be cool by looking like I was reading a long book. I was trying to be cool by hanging out with people that were, you know, had hard lives. And I've learned since then not to romanticize that. But that book also helped me see that too, because it's real, you know, and the people, and it's really hard stuff that the kids are going through.
Fighting for the underdog.
Yeah, I mean, it's a cliche, but it's like it's a real thing you go through as a kid, you know, and it teaches you empathy.
Your second pick is The Last Report on Miracles at Little Nohorse by Louise Erdrich. And this is a book about a parish priest in a North Dakota Indian reservation. He has a secret.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know it's revealed pretty early on, so it's not a game changer to say it. The priest is a woman, and the opening of this book is so cool because it's like this woman nun, and she's like just great, like piano player, and she's so impassioned about music that it kind of creates this sexual fervor in her, and they basically throw her out of the convent. She can't survive there because music makes her become this creature that no one can contain. And so she ends up on a farm and marries this guy and, you know, goes back to her name, Agnes, and the guy dies in a flood, and then she ends up, like, finding this dead priest and taking on his identity and becoming a priest and going to a reservation and ministering all these people.
From what you're saying, the novel also seems to speak to sort of the hugely different kinds of lives that are open to us. Does that aspect of the novel speak to you at all, this sense of the vastly different possible ways that one can go through life and the ways that life can change and become kind of a totally different life?
Yeah. Yeah, I love the idea of transformation in this because this whole book is about transformation. Throughout the book, Father Damien speaks as Father Damien sometimes, but then Louise is so great at using that tool of also speaking as Agnes, who's the woman under Father Damien's robes. And so sometimes Agnes relates to something different than Father Damien would. She's such a great writer that she can go between the two and stay true to the single character, but the duality of it. She's writing from a very genuine place and has a sense of humor about every character she writes about, which I love, but really dark, like, whoa. But I love darkness and funniness at the same time. It's just, so does Emily, I think. It's what life is made of.